Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey guys, before we get to this week's show, I wanted to remind you that in this holiday season, we can't forget those less fortunate than us. And here at Somewhere in the Skies, I am running an event I did last year as well. For anyone who purchases merchandise from the official Somewhere in the Skies store, or purchases my book, Somewhere in the Skies, A Human Approach to an Alien Phenomenon, 25% of the proceeds will be donated to the Women's Refugee Commission. There are currently almost 60 million refugees worldwide who have been displaced by conflict. The Women's Refugee Commission improves the lives and protects the rights of women, children, and youth who suffer this displacement. The commission also researches their needs, identifies solutions, and advocates for programs and policies to strengthen their resilience and drive change in humanitarian practice. Since 1989, they have been a leading expert on the needs of refugee women and children, and the policies that can protect and empower them. So help empower your fellow human beings this holiday season, while also supporting Somewhere in the Skies. The merchandise store can be found at tpublic.com and by searching for either Somewhere in the Skies or Sprague51. That's Sprague51. Again, the website is teepublic.com for all Somewhere in the Skies merchandise. The book is available in paperback and ebook and can be found on Amazon or at richarddolanpress.com. If you wish to support the show separately and help us grow both in quality and quantity, the Patreon campaign is still running, and many rewards are now available for different levels of monthly contributions. And the list of rewards is only growing in 2018. To learn more and to become a patron, visit patreon.com/somewhereskies. Thank you so much. And now, let's get to this week's show.
This is Somewhere in the Skies with Ryan Sprague.
My gosh. They're all going against the wind. The wind's 120 knots from the west.
Oh, that thing, dude.
That's not LNS, though, is it?
It's not.
That is LNS, dude.
Well, if there's like...
Look at that thing.
Welcome to Somewhere in the Skies. I'm your host, Ryan Sprague. The audio you just heard comes from a recently declassified case file. It pertains to an encounter between a Navy fighter jet and an unknown object. It was released by the Defense Department's Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, a secret Pentagon project that we learned recently was working in the shadows to investigate UFOs. This story is making national headlines across every major news outlet, and today we talk in depth about it, along with other highlights of 2017 in the Somewhere in the Skies year-end wrap-up. I am joined by close friends and colleagues, Jason McClellan, Mike DeMonte, and MJ Benias, to discuss some of the most interesting UFO, alien, and space news that graced us in 2017. And we then look forward to what 2018 may have in store for us as we continue to search further and deeper somewhere in the skies. So, without further ado, let's get to the 2017 Somewhere in the Skies wrap-up. This is going to be an epic conversation today. I thought, what better way to wrap up the year than to bring on three of my closest friends and colleagues. I have got Jason McClellan from Rogue Planet, I have got MJ Benias from Terra Obscura, and I have Mike DeMonte from Punk Rock and UFOs. Gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me today.
Pleasure to be here with you fine gentlemen.
Yes, this is going to be an interesting one for sure. I did ask all of you before we started recording, we are not going to be able to get through this without a drink, so I need to know, what does everyone have in hand right now? Jason, I'm kind of stealing this from your show, so we'll start with you, my friend. What are you drinking tonight?
It's kind of hilarious that you decided to do this, because in an uncharacteristic manner, I'm drinking water tonight.
Ooh.
I have a reason for that.
Okay.
I already did my drinking earlier, but I just finished dinner recently, and I don't cook a meal without it being extremely spicy. Mm-hmm. So water's necessary right now. But to make it interesting, I'll give you a little brief story about my water. So I live in Phoenix, and the tap water here, the groundwater, is just absolutely horrible. You don't want to drink it. It tastes awful. So, and I know that's the case in many places, but in Phoenix especially. So I go to whatever grocery store I shop at, haul my 5-gallon jug, and fill that up at the machines that they have at all the grocery stores. The grocery store closest to my house has two of these machines sitting right outside the front door. And the brand, the company that operates these water machines is called, perfect for Phoenix, it's called Fiesta Water. So it makes it seem more exciting than it is. So I'm drinking Fiesta Water.
You know what? We're going to say that's a tequila.
It might be.
Yeah. Let's go with that.
Let's go with that. But I do have alcohol in my system, so I guess that counts, guys. Sorry.
That's fair. That's totally fair. MJ, what do you got for us?
It's winter here, but I find that I often tend to go in reverse. So I'm enjoying a nice gin and soda, Bombay Sapphire on ice with a hint of a club soda and a splash of lemon juice. So I'm keeping it classy tonight, boys.
Oh,
that sounds delightful. That is my go-to gin. So
Same here. Done,
buddy.
Yes, very well done. Very well done. What temperature do you have there, MJ? I have to ask.
It's actually nice right now. Hold on, let me. It was nice all day, but currently it's a balmy -1 centigrade. Centigrade.
Right,
so I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit. Sorry.
I don't either. Dude, I don't have the conversion ability.
I am freezing in Phoenix. I'm like shivering right now, and it's 52. So,
It's
67 degrees and humid in Houston.
Okay, Mike. Awesome. Yeah, Jason, I'm pretty much with you, buddy. Yeah. This is actually going to be my first holiday without snow, so it's going to be very interesting. Mike, what are you drinking?
I mean, it's Monday, so in the most punk rock fashion, I'm drinking water as well, because Monday nights, I do punk rock stuff. Like I go cycling, I drink a smoothie, and I eat a salad. So, and it's also late. So the last thing I drank did have alcohol in it. It was mouthwash.
That is fair enough, man. I can't imagine swallowing that. Yeah.
If I didn't have to work tomorrow morning, I would have a drink in hand. I have a lot of whiskey left over, different flavored whiskey left over. if I have to teach the youth of America tomorrow morning, I would definitely be indulging.
Yeah, that is a good point. I think what are we at, gentlemen? Three different coasts right now, so it's getting a little late for a couple of you guys. So we will run through this. I am drinking.
What are you drinking, Ryan?
I have got, Jason, Dalmore Scotch Whiskey. This is
nice.
A 12-year-old. So my girlfriend got me this amazing gift for Christmas, the Advent calendar of whiskey.
Amazing.
Oh, that's awesome.
Amazing.
It's amazing. Yeah, you just open up a little thing every day and it's got a little, you know, shot bottle of whiskey. A lot of them, it's from I believe England, so it's got a lot of scotches, but I've run across some really interesting ones. There was a Japanese one I had yesterday. I think it was 20 years old. This one's 12 years old today. Very good. Very, very mild, very caramely, very wintry. So I'm loving it.
That's very cool. Yeah, I only started seeing those things this year, and those are the coolest gifts.
They really
love
are.
Those advent calendars. That's
and they
awesome.
Do every alcohol you can think of. So
yeah.
I will give a shameless plug. This is called Drinks by the Dram for anyone interested in a very, very unique gift this holiday season. Drinks by the Dram. All right, moving on.
All right. Well, so, I feel that Mike and I are at a disadvantage going into this, but we'll try to pull our weight.
We're depending on you guys, the sober ones, for sure. So the first, I guess, story I kind of wanted to run through with you guys is a very... Now, we hear about UFO cases on a daily basis, the four of us, but this one really caught all of our attention and was pretty interesting. And this was in October of this past year in Oregon, where several witnesses, both military and commercial, this was also confirmed by the FAA and NORAD, of an unidentified flying object in the skies. This was first reported on Reddit and then eventually was reported in the Drive website. So apparently around 4:30 p.m. over the border of Oregon and California, there were reports that were coming in of a craft, and there was no transponder. There was no communication being done between the other aircraft and this. So this is pretty interesting. There was visual confirmation, but not any really good descriptions of what was seen. But Jason, I know you did cover this in a episode of Unknown. So I wanted to maybe throw this one over to you, man. And if you have any more, could shed any more light on this case for us.
Sure. Well, one of the, you know, frustrating things that we tend to deal with in this field is the lack of real follow-up on a lot of these cases we hear about. You know, and it's a sad state of affairs. But you look into this, into anything with UFOs, any current news story that comes out that sounds awesome, and you just kind of assume you're never going to hear anything about it again, because that's what happens most of the time. And as a couple of days ago, I did try to find more information, any follow up to what we found out initially from this report, and I haven't personally seen any more about it. And I, truth be told, I didn't go back and look at Reddit, because Reddit is Reddit.
Yeah, exactly.
I think potentially some really good information came from that. And, you know, it these sources could be pilots. They could be people who were personally involved in it. But, you know, you're just going on faith there. But all that aside, I mean, with the article that came out with Tyler Rogoway, the journalist who did the story, he did more than a lot of people do with UFO stories. He did actually press the FAA and NORAD, trying to get confirmation, trying to get more information. He did get that confirmation. And a couple things with this case, you know, really jump out at me, because I love when this happens. Number one, again, official confirmation that there was something in the air that was seen by multiple witnesses, both in the air and on the ground. The craziest thing is the scrambling of military aircraft to try to intercept this thing. But crazier still, they couldn't find it. So they scrambled military aircraft because there was an unidentified craft in the air, and they couldn't find it when they got up there. So mystery craft that was going super fast, approximately 860 miles per hour. It had limited radar reflectivity. And, I mean, it was seen by a lot of pilots in the air. It was allegedly executing high G maneuvers. So a lot of interesting elements to this story that, I don't know, make it a pretty darn good UFO story in my book.
I think so. And I think there was there audio as well from this? Did anyone have
that? Yeah, that's what makes it fun, too, listening through the chatter from pilots in the air as they're tracking this thing, communicating with the airport tower. You know, it's fascinating to listen to, and it's almost like listening to like a police scanner or something, hearing, you know, an event unfold right before you're listening to it live and hearing their reactions. It's kind of exciting.
Right. I love when there's audio data to go with these UFO cases. It helps so much, and it really puts you in the shoes of the witnesses, which is something we rarely get. We'll talk about another case that recently came out where we had some audio as well, video. But yeah, this was a pretty compelling one. I don't know, guys, do you have anything to add to this one? Were you following this case at all?
I was going to chime in real quick. So I thought it was kind of a coincidence when I was looking stuff up about this, that just a few weeks prior, the Oregonian, their website, Oregon Live, ran, it was October 12th. This was, I think, 2 weeks before the sighting happened. They ran a throwback story about a UFO case in the 20s. Whoa. And if you look up Paul Trent UFO photos, which were taken in Oregon as well,
yep.
they're very distinct.
Yeah, these are famous photos, by the way. I mean, these are some of the first UFO photos we've ever gotten, I believe, of a clear object. And to this day, Jason, I don't know, and MJ, I don't know if you guys can attest to this, they've pretty much been proven authentic, right? I mean, there hasn't been tons of controversy behind them, as far as I know.
Well, I think it was Bruce McAbee, right, who sort of...
Yeah.
He's the big supporter of the Trent photos, and he still stands by them.
I think so.
Even today, right? And I think that, like, you know, it's tough, right? Because I think all he claims, though, is that, you know, no one tampered with the film or no one tampered with the photograph. But you know,
right, it's so a physical object.
Right.
It's a physical object in the sky. But, you know, whether it's, you know, a lampshade or something getting thrown into the air, and you know, he can't really comment on that. It could really be anything, the Trent photos. But they're definitely part of sort of UFO mythology, right? They're definitely sort of well-known pictures.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's really interesting, Mike. I didn't think about that. We do have some of the first UFO photos ever from Oregon, so that was pretty cool. And I mean, in terms of this recent case here, I thought it was pretty interesting that the theories, they ranged from a possible drug smuggling operation, since this happened in the middle of the day, pretty much. It was in broad daylight, or they think it might have been possible military test craft. Some people said that they saw a white plane, which is pretty interesting. But yeah, I guess...
it was a white craft. That's really the only description they had, and the time of day, the pilots flying, you know, most of the closest pilots, you know, it was toward the sun, so they couldn't really see it for very long and really just saw a reflection of something. So
right, and this sort of harkens back to early 2017. I'm thinking of the Chilean case, which to this point, have we had, guys, I don't know about you, any updates on what the hell that was? Was there any firm answer to what that video was?
Was this Leslie Cain one?
Yes.
With the thing dumping?
Yep.
Yeah, wasn't it debunked on, not Metabunk, but...
one of those.
I think they also did, but with a lot of these cases, you know, there are plenty of people who, you know, look through flight records and make their determination that, well, based on where they say these things were in the time of day, it was obviously flight so-and-so out of this place. So, yeah, I think with that case, several people were more than content saying, yeah, for sure they identified the flight. But, you know, then it comes down to you as an individual deciding if you want to go with this side or this side. I do think many people are happy with an identification of just a flight that was in the area, but others are still on the fence.
Yeah.
Well, if they were saying it was a flight, that how did they explain the how it was almost breaking off? How did they explain that? Because that was featured on Josh Gates' Destination Truth. He did his whole like 4-part Chasing UFO series, and that case, and they tried to recreate it I think they were on an air balloon. They tried to recreate that same thing through not special effects, but just through kind of like practical effects in the air to try to create a similar phenomenon. They had trouble doing so. So I'm wondering, you know, if people are saying, well, there's a flight at the same time, how does that explain the phenomena of what people were seeing?
I think it had to do with they were making claims that it was dumping like wastewater out of its like basically toilet water.
The lavatories, yeah.
Yeah. Banking, yeah. Or something like the way the plane would bank to like the left or the right or something. I guess the way the jet would show up on the FLIR because of all the heat, just the remnant heat, what you're actually seeing is not sort of anything coming off. It's just the heat signature of the jet wash coming off the rear of the airplane. I don't know. Metabunk was Metabunk after all. They did a really good job actually of sort of providing all of their sort of evidence and citations and references. I mean, no one from the other side has sort of come back and said, well, here's why it isn't this or here's why it isn't that. I don't think they've really done much to kind of counter the Metabunk's debunking. So I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm just concerned that it was just, you know, they released it maybe prematurely thinking it was something big and turns out just a plane.
Well, and I think that's a good point, MJ, that, you know, the journalist Leslie Cain, she did say, like, if you have an answer, please tell me. Like, you know, again, a responsible journalist saying, like, to the public,
tell us what you know. We're bringing this to you. Tell us what you know. We did run into a lot of issue with this case, I think, early on, where people were so quick to be so unbelievably they scrutinized it to a point where they're saying that the journalist covering this case in specific was stupid or was irresponsible, when in reality it's a pretty compelling video by an army, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. No matter what it was, they wanted to bring it to the public. So I think that was, it was an interesting case. It kind of reminded me of this one, but interesting nonetheless.
Well, something important that we have to keep in mind with especially these cases where we have video, we have footage from planes and coming from military sources, and really any case in general, is keeping an open mind and understanding that facts and information that come to us through the investigation process do change, and we need to be open to change. A lot of people latch on to things, and I don't remember if it was that particular Chilean case or a different case, but I know something with information displayed on the camera, I think it was later found out that it was like a new camera and it hadn't been calibrated right. So maybe some right. of the figures on the camera displaying weren't actually correct.
To like a centimeter, I believe, Jason.
Yeah.
Isn't that right?
Yeah. So yeah. Completely putting what was being viewed in a different location in the sky than the investigators right. had initially reported, because they were judging off of what the camera was saying. Yeah. So little things like that can completely change a case. And a lot of times people dismiss little things like that because they say, oh, well, I read the initial report, and they dismiss that because they said that absolutely couldn't happen. Well, when you have something like information from the camera that you're basing everything off of in terms of positioning, that changes your entire case. I mean, you have to go back and revisit evidence that you've crossed off the list, or possibilities that you crossed off the list.
I was going to say, one thing I like about this airliners, and I think the article is called Airliners and F-15s Involved in Bizarre Encounter with Mystery Aircraft. Yeah. One thing I like about this is it didn't come from sort of a UFO source or a typical
right.
UFO source.
Yeah.
Right? I like when articles come from sort of these rogue players who are not involved in any way within the UFO community. They're sort of just, you know, regular journalists who just sort of dig into a case or an interesting event with no real background in the UFO community. So they don't really arrive to their conclusions from sort of a predetermined, or I guess a pre-established sort of notion of what UFOs are, or at least sort of the mythology behind UFOs. So that's one thing I found this case to be interesting, right? And it's probably something, you know, it's probably not aliens, but I really like this sort of article, and I really enjoyed listening on your show, actually, Jason, the audio. It was super interesting because, again, right, this is like totally not a UFO story that sort of became a UFO story, right?
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. I mean, I love that, and especially with the background of that particular journalist. He's a military and aviation correspondent, so he's coming at this, you know, from the angle of, hey, I'm really familiar with military aircraft. This is what I write about.
Yeah.
And so that gives it a really fun angle, you know, for me personally. So
it speaks volumes, too, the fact that you're having someone, like, you know, you said, MJ, who's not, you know, invested in the subject like we are, you know, it's a different perspective, but for them to be commenting about it as well and covering it, I think that just speaks, like I said, speaks volumes about just the interest the stuff is starting to kind of garner.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. And in that context, you know, pointing out from his military and aviation background, pointing out why this particular case is something that has elements that we should take note of, you know, not just saying, oh, there was some mystery thing in the sky, but pointing out the fact that here it was being acknowledged by official sources that jets were scrambled, that it wasn't able to be located. Just a lot of things that raised red flags from a military/aviation standpoint.
I loved it. Loved it. We got nothing but the facts. And I think that's, you know, Mike, you can attest to this as a professional journalist, and you guys as well. Like, that's what we need. There's no belief involved in this. It was, this happened, fact by fact, time, date, done. Boom. Hopefully we'll get some sort of follow-up. Who knows? We run into
that's that always the hope.
All the time. I know, Jason. well, guys, we're going to do a UFO sandwich. So we've got some meat in between these, or some vegan meat as well. Sorry.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Have you guys had the Impossible Burger, by the way?
I have not had the Impossible Burger. I've had the Beyond Burger.
Okay.
The Beyond Burger is amazing. Still haven't had the Impossible
Burger. Dude, I had an Impossible Burger last night, and I'm hooked. I I'm going to cross over. I think I'm ready to cross over finally. Just
dude,
for that.
So good.
Come join the dark side.
Yep.
Yes, as the last Jedi, I would say. All right, so yeah, in our sandwich, gentlemen, we have another pretty... A lot of these things we're covering tonight are very recent, which always seems to happen when you try to do a wrap-up show. Everything happens like a couple days after or, you know, stuff like that. It's never throughout the year. So we
Dude,
have...
The year is so long.
It's so freaking long.
It's hard to remember what happened early in the
it
year.
It really is, and there are some things that we all want to forget. We did discuss a couple things we were going to talk about, a few individuals specifically, but I think we should veer towards more the optimistic side. So the next one we're going to talk about is the my girlfriend's from Hawaii. She will never forgive me if I get this wrong. The Oumuamua asteroid story. I think I said that right.
Say it again, Ryan. Say it again.
Oumuamua.
I was actually practicing trying to pronounce it earlier, and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to let Ryan take the lead on this. This is his show. I'm just going to put whatever.
That's the appropriate decision.
She's probably in the other room thinking, what the hell is he doing in there? All right. So we have an asteroid from another star system that recently, if not currently, is zipping past Jupiter at around 196,000 miles per hour. Holy shit. This is... actually too fast to be trapped by the sun's gravitational pull. Amazing. This was first spotted by astronomers at Pan-STARRS project at the University of Hawaii. This is pretty interesting, guys. This is not like most meteors or asteroids we're used to seeing that are round, jagged. This is cigar-shaped and pretty weird. It's pretty weird. And some scientists do not think that this is a natural object, including Stephen Hawking. So they had a plan that they wanted to try to communicate with whatever this object is. And I did ask a couple of you guys to do some homework on this one because I am horrible at astronomy and space stuff. So if anyone could chime in on this one and has further details, please feel free to jump in.
Sure. So I'll start us off here. The most recent article actually that just came out literally an hour ago was from BGR.com, which is like a tech website. And I guess there's been a recent development. They are calling it officially sort of a comet now, or at least, I don't want to say officially, but sort of they're assessing it now as a comet because it doesn't sort of contain the usual sort of rock-like substance that an asteroid or a meteor would. However, due to its odd shape and I guess the speed it's traveling and the fact that it's been traveling for quite some time, it's lost its outer sort of icy shell. So that's why it's not really sort of giving off the typical comet trail, and it's... just sort of behaving oddly, I suppose. But right now, they're considering it a comet. But, you know, we can always try talking to it, too, I guess.
Yeah, this was a pretty interesting one. I the day this came out, I don't know about you guys, but everyone was like, what is this thing? Especially since someone like Stephen Hawking is saying, you know, this looks like a ship.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting thing for someone like him to say. Again, maybe that was taken out of context somehow. I'm sure it was, but this one was pretty interesting. I don't know if anyone else has anything else to add.
Well, I love stuff like this, and I mean it just, you know, another illustration of how bizarrely awesome the universe is and how we really have no idea about the things that are in it. So, you know, we see something that looks different, and it's just the same with UFOs too, things in the sky that we're not used to seeing. We see something that looks bizarre, then all of a sudden our imaginations run wild and we're all, ooh, what's this? This must be an alien spacecraft. Yeah. So, you know, and some people poo-poo the initiatives like the breakthrough initiatives, people who, you know, train the Green Bank Telescope and try to listen to see if they can get any alien extraterrestrial signals off of this thing. I applaud those efforts. You know, I'm glad someone's out there doing it because we should try everything, right? I mean, we don't know what it is. So why just dismiss something and say, well, obviously it's not extraterrestrials. We don't know. It could be. It's probably not. It looks like a big piece of rock that looks bizarre, but doesn't look like a cool spacecraft like I would imagine awesome extraterrestrial civilizations would build. But, hey, it's possible. So let these guys in their group, you know, they've got the money. I mean, it's Yuri Milner and Mark Zuckerberg. You know, yeah. I love what Breakthrough Initiatives is doing. Like, I love billionaires who are spending their money on space exploration. That is amazing. So let them do it. I'm glad. I haven't heard from aliens yet aboard this thing, but hey, keep looking.
Exactly, man. Yeah. I think that's a good point that, like, there's got to – if these projects are going to continue, like, they need something to study. So why not throw that money into something like this? While others may say it's a waste of time or money, this is why we have these projects.
And, dude, I always point it out. People love to rip on SETI and stuff.
Right.
You know, SETI's not something that's really getting taxpayer money. You know, it's stuff they get donations for and whatever. And projects like this, breakthrough initiatives, these are billionaires. And billionaires can either spend their money on yachts and being obnoxious here on Earth, or they can fund space initiatives. I'm all for the billionaires who want to spend their money on space.
Very good point. Mike, what were you going to add?
Yeah, I was just saying the interesting thing was the name it was given in Hawaiian, it stands for scout. Mm-hmm. It means scout, which is really fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, again, like what we can bring to things like this is just, it goes far beyond anything that we do in terms of like studying UFOs here on Earth. It's amazing that we have, like you said, Jason, people willing to put money into looking for things out there. So let's keep doing that. And I guess to sort of piggyback off of that is our next big story that came a few days ago. And this is the discovery of the first alien star system with 8 planets, which sounds a little similar to our own. So I'm going to throw it over to you guys. Who's looked into this one? I've barely scratched the surface when it comes to this, but it sounds extremely interesting.
Well, I can certainly talk a little bit about it. You know, this is one of those things that we get announced notification from NASA that they're going to hold a press conference to reveal some exciting findings. Sometimes, and more times than not, NASA is to blame for hyping stories. They started doing this several years ago when they realized that people got really excited about extraterrestrials and the possibility of alien civilizations. So they'd start carefully wording their press releases to hype it up and create this maybe a little bit of hope that they're going to announce they found aliens. So that never happens and hasn't happened yet. And even now with press releases, and the press release for this particular story wasn't really hyped up like NASA has done in recent history, but that didn't stop a lot of mainstream media from wording their headlines in a way that said, is NASA going to reveal they found aliens? Like there was nothing in the press release to even hint that they had this massive announcement or something to do with extraterrestrial life. Previous press releases have said that because they're talking about, you know, things with astrobiology and potential signs and potential energy sources that could mean that life could have been there at one point in time. But there was nothing like that in this. But still, there were plenty of headlines wondering and speculating about what this announcement was going to be and saying they are going to announce they found aliens. Well, there's nothing like that. So it was on December 14th when they had their press conference to announce the latest findings from the Kepler Space Telescope. And anybody's listened to me over the years through various interviews and shows, I love Kepler.
Super fan of Kepler.
Like the little space robot that could. Like he's overcome so much adversity and he's still out there trucking. And you know, so what Kepler did, they sifted through some of the recent data collected by Kepler. And they found this solar system approximately 2,500 light years from Earth. Planets, there are 8 of them. They circle a star called Kepler-90. And so this solar system now ties our solar system for the highest number of planets around a single star. So, of course, people start the speculation out there that, oh, maybe it's our twin. Maybe there's an Earth out there and all this stuff. And also we can get into a debate about, well, hey, we really have 9 planets. Let's be honest here. Don't be mean to my Pluto. See, when I was a boy.
When I was a young lad.
Big fan of, yeah. Yes. But anyway, so they found this. They found a couple more planets in the solar system to bring its count up to 8 to tie our planet count in our solar system. That's cool. But the coolest part about this announcement was that NASA teamed up with Google AI. They used machine learning to sift through Kepler's data. So machines found these planets, kind of freaky, but kind of cool. So what they did was they essentially constructed a neural net based off of human brain. And these machines were able to look through data and notice dips that human eyes would miss, and they were able to locate these planets. Mm. So that's going to help tremendously in sifting through Kepler data. You know, this thing was launched in 2009, and it just continues collecting mountains of data. It would take years and years and years and years to sort of sift through it. They've implemented and utilized other things like crowdsourcing and other computers like SETI at home, that system to help sift through the data. But still, it's going to take forever, especially since Kepler's still collecting data. But now that we've got the machines on it, those robots, they'll find plenty more planets. But since launching in 2009, 2,500 planets, exoplanets have been confirmed thanks to Kepler. So pretty awesome. I love Kepler.
Exactly, man. And again, proving like we're searching for radio signals, we're searching visually. It's incredible that like these things are still going on. And unless we hear these breakthrough announcements by NASA, not many people ever think about it. Like, this should be national headlines anytime there's even a small discovery. But again, it's just not the sort of media world we live in. But
amazing. we're so used to stuff now. I mean, you know, desensitized to everything and anything because we've heard it before. So exoplanet, been there, done that.
Right.
Let me know when you find aliens, and then even then, people won't be that excited. But people don't get it. They, exoplanets are fairly recent. We didn't even know about a single exoplanet until, you know, recent history. So I don't know. It's all very exciting. It's all happening super fast, too. So I think because we're so inundated with it now, it's just such a common occurrence that people, you know, brush it off. They're all another planet. So what?
Yeah, no, I was going to agree with that. It's, you know, it's common occurrence, but at the same time, it's, you know, you're right. It's the people who are exploring these are the billionaires and NASA and groups like SETI, because the government's not putting any money into this. As far as we know, you know, space exploration is not on the budget in the United States right now. So it's just fascinating that, you know, all these discoveries kind of has to be done, not rogue per se, no pun intended, but, you know, like you said, you know, we're just kind of desensitized to it too. It's just kind of happening very, very low key, you know, and when it does happen, you know, you're right. It's like, oh, another, you know, Star Wars discovered, and it's not as big news, but at the same time, people are still interested, if that makes sense. Just the fact that, you know, so many of these sites were running almost clickbait about the NASA announcement.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that speaks volumes of the fact that of the interest of it, even if the announcement or the news isn't earth shattering.
Well, and the things that really do hit are so just like head scratching. You know, really? Why did this story become so large? I mean, think about the last solar eclipse. That was like a pop culture thing. You know, wait, why is this happening?
Yeah, that's a good
all
point.
Of a sudden, everybody's into eclipses. What's going on?
I mean, is space cool? Again,
I'm tripping. I'm all, obviously these people like have finally woken up. Space is cool, man, and all this stuff going on. But why now? What happened to make everybody interested in the eclipse?
I'll tell you guys.
I think because Earth sucks so bad.
Yeah. You know? Maybe it's that, Mike, or I was going to say, like, in order for this thing to be, you know, a pop culture thing or to really get to the masses, you got to get an Instagram selfie with it. And we just can't do that with these planets yet.
That's true. But they even tried to latch onto that several years ago, some of these initiatives with, take a selfie and send it to this number and we'll take all your selfies to Mars.
God, that's where we're at, guys.
I don't think this would be a ufology 2017 year in review, you know, unless we mentioned sort of how exciting it's been for sort of the exopolitics and the disclosure movement. Yeah. I think that they've had a really good year. And I think that if I have to sort of comment on one post I'm tired of seeing, it is the typical disclosure person who sort of writes like drip, drip, splash in regards to the news this year. Because it's been this sort of, you know, discovery of exoplanets is suddenly, you know, NASA just slowly dripping that there's an alien reality. They're just slowly releasing this information.
Obviously.
Yeah. And, you know, so help me. If I see the words drip, drip, splash again, I'm going to go nuts in regards to disclosure. Because
you're going to see it.
And I've kind of, you know, girded my loins. I'm ready for it, but I'm just –
It has to be mentioned now.
Yeah, it has to be mentioned in the 2017 ufology review here.
Yes. Absolutely. And with that, gentlemen, we're going to get to the meat, the actual meat, my vegan friends, of 2017. Let's start with Tom DeLonge. Now, we had this major announcement about To the Stars Academy. I don't need to remind listeners about what that is. You know what it is now. Jason, you did a wonderful discussion with both of these gentlemen about this. So yeah, who wants to take this one? Before we even get to what happened a couple days ago, who wants to give a brief overview and sort of maybe what's currently going on with To the Stars Academy? Anybody want to take this one? I dare you. I dare you.
MJ would love to. He's just waiting.
I said we should have MJ take it.
So I will try and give my most unbiased journalistic To the Stars Academy recap.
Okay.
Let's say. So I can't remember the month. October, I think?
Yes,
to the Stars
October.
Academy of Arts
October
and Science.
11th.
Yep.
There you go. October 11th.
All this stuff happened in October, yeah.
A day which will live in infamy. The Academy.
Yeah, that's my wedding anniversary.
To the Stars Academy of Arts and Science officially sort of was announced by Tom DeLonge and a group of individuals, let's say contractors from various government and intelligence agencies, and they announced that they were launching a project that would join both science and art to one, develop new technology for the public good, which would bring 25th century technology to the 21st century, as well as some potential new evidence to suggest that advanced aerial threats exist and that unknown aerial phenomena are real and haunting our skies, and it's not necessarily benevolent. Is that okay? Was that fair?
Absolutely.
Mike? I threw up a few times in my mouth saying all that, so I just need to wash that down with my gin. Someone take over.
Let's talk about more recently, the past couple of days.
Yes,
so
let's get into that. Thank you.
Well, you know, I mean, me and Ryan were talking about this last week, how I don't think Tom has really done himself favors leading up to it, just because I know the initial announcement, just the kind of the flack he was getting from it. To the Stars Academy, I think it really was a big blow to his ego. And I think was it on Thursday or Friday, he posted this tweet just kind of attacking a lot of the people who follow him, or just the UFO community in general. And it was very, it was just a bad look. And then 2 days later, they dropped this footage, which they've been promising.
Wait. Mike, we have to be fair. We have to be fair here. After his announcement in October for several months, several weeks, he posted many photographs that are clearly have already been debunked by the UFO community.
Sure. Yes.
His Twitter feed and saying that this was evidence of UFOs when clearly this was sort of ridiculous hoaxed information from even Secure Team 10. So we need to be fair here that, he did sort of get his ego hurt. But I got to be honest, what is he doing posting these ridiculous photographs that clearly are not legitimate?
I think that just comes from his general sloppiness. He's very ADD and he gets really excited. And rather, if you're going to post a photo like that, explain, hey, this is something that's fake, but we're going to try to build something that's like this. Or there's none of that. It's just very rushed and very
agreed.
Not very well thought out. And I think a lot of things he kind of posts on social media aren't very thought out because he doesn't have a lot of people managing let me put it this way. I think there's people who manage officially what he can and can't do regarding the company. But when it comes to his own social media, I don't think there's anyone in his ear saying, hey, this isn't a good idea or not, especially the people he has working with. And the people he has on his team are, to the stars, not the academy. I mean, it's family and friends he's been working with for years now. And I don't think any of them have the balls to be anything other than a yes man or a friend to tell him, hey, this isn't a good look or this isn't a good idea. I'm not defending him posting the ridiculous.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com. A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend, but what won't change? Needing health insurance.
UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Those hoax photos he did, you know, that's definitely a head-scratcher. But I just think, you know, he kind of has this accountability-free world with To the Stars.
Right, right. I mean, he is the, not the sole owner, but yeah, he runs basically everything that's coming out of there. And that tweet, Mike, was deleted, I believe, a few hours later. The hoaxed photos were deleted at one point. Yeah, so this guy, this is... If anything is coming out of this whole Tom DeLonge thing, which may run even deeper into 2018, it's that the dude is shooting himself in the foot time and time again, but then producing solid stuff. That can be debated. We will get into that. Many people argue that none of what has happened in the past few days is anything new. I want to hear your guys' opinion on that. So, Mike, you were sort of hinting at what happened. So why don't you sort of drop this bomb for us that I guess inevitably Tom DeLonge dropped on us a couple days ago, Saturday morning, I believe.
Yeah, it was really interesting to me because the New York Times apparently was, you know, they're the ones who quote unquote broke the story, and they were holding on to it for days because a lot of times, you know, before you run a story, especially something like that where there's multiple sources, you have to get the sources approved by your editors. You know, so it's always fascinating to me when there's, you know, you hear about, you know, Washington Post or big outlets that have stories with 30 plus sources. You know, usually it's a pretty credible story. So I think this is something that's been working for a while, and I think this is something that Tom has teased, and he couldn't really reveal anything about it yet. But still, why would you? You know, the story's coming out soon. Why would you tweet something ridiculous previous days, just try to stir in the pot and attacking people? So that kind of boggles my mind. But on Saturday morning, the New York Times came out with this great story, and the story never mentioned Tom by name. It's mostly about Luis Elizondo and his position in the Pentagon and the gimbal footage, which To the Stars released on their website. And then, yeah, so that's kind of where we're at Saturday. And the biggest takeaway I take from this is this story is everywhere. It's on CNN. It was New York Times' largest story this weekend in terms of hits and comments. NBC picked up on it.
Washington Post.
Every major outlet reported on it. And I blogged about this today. And the most important thing we take, you know, the biggest takeaway we take about this is, number one, these major outlets are reporting on it, and they're taking it seriously, too. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not dismissing it. And especially with all that's going on in the world right now, you know, the 24-hour news cycle is very much dominated by ratings, what's clicking, what people care about. And what, like I said, with the, you know, the situation in North Korea, what's going on in America right now between the GOP tax bill and Trump making a fool out of himself every day. You know, every day there's something new. There's so much stuff that's dominating the headlines. So for this to kind of get some play, even if it's 10 minutes, I think that says something. That speaks volumes to the fact that, hey, maybe people are starting to care and show that they care about this stuff.
I want to believe that so bad, Mike. I do wonder, though, a lot of the reporters on these major outlets, when they had Leslie Keen on, they had Luis Elizondo on to interview them, the first thing they said before they even asked about what this actual news was about was, it is so refreshing to talk about something other than American politics. So that right there, I do question, you know, the genuine interest by some of the mainstream media. But at the same time, it does come down to ratings. We do know that UFOs and aliens are a big hot button thing when it is in the mainstream, even if it is ridiculed at times. But like you said, there's been very little ridicule factor with this story. And I think it is because of the content. We have an extremely compelling video that was given to us by To the Stars. And I do want to ask about that. Do any of you know, does DeLong and To the Stars, do they own this video?
I don't think so. I don't know that that'd be possible unless there's some story where he paid for the rights to it, but
yeah.
I don't think so.
It belongs to the government, and no one person can own it. So it's a declassified video, so anybody can get it.
Okay.
But they are the ones that facilitated the getting it released, so obviously they're the ones that all the media sources are citing to, so, and rightfully so. But no, he doesn't own it.
Yeah. Jason, could you maybe comment on what exactly the news was besides the video? We have a project that I don't know about you guys, but I never really heard anything about this. Maybe I'm a naive ufologist. I don't know, but please tell me if you guys knew anything about this project.
I think the videos that were released are cool, and people need to understand, or, you know, we'll just wait and see if they follow through. And I think they will, but they just launched their community of interest. And we're talking about To the Stars Academy of Arts and Science here, something that Tom had hinted at that they were trying to do. And that's this community of interest, an online platform that they have designed to kind of get people actively involved. To what extent, we don't know yet, but that's where they plan to release lots of these videos that have been declassified from government sources, to get people discussing them, looking into them, whatever else. So I think that's going to be an endless supply of fun for all of us researchers in the coming year. But obviously the biggest story here, and some people don't think it's a story at all, and as MJ alluded to, many people love pointing out that this could be disinformation or preparing us for a false flag or other things that really make me annoyed. But we learned that the Pentagon, the government, had an active UFO investigation program going on up until just recent years. So some sources I've seen have been turning it into a financial story too, talking about spending $22 million on UFOs. That's ridiculous.
Are you kidding me?
and being surprised at black budget spending. I mean, this is a big win, big confirmation for some people in the UFO world who have been screaming about UFOs and black budgets for so many years. But here we have confirmation that money was spent and used for black budget purposes to fund this UFO program that ran for a span of 5 years and worked primarily with Robert Bigelow and Bigelow Aerospace. This shouldn't come as a surprise to anybody, because we know that Bigelow still, not really with confirmation, but we all assume that he still operates his advanced aerospace division of Bigelow Aerospace. And that's sort of what happened after his National Institute of Discovery Sciences that he put together. But money was funneled to him for the purpose of doing this investigation for the government's project. One of the more exciting things is he changed buildings, apparently, on his big compound there in Nevada, to store materials allegedly recovered from crashed UFOs. And again, that shouldn't be terribly exciting for people who have followed Bigelow and what he's done with UFO research. Even, I don't think it's still there, but the National Atomic Testing Museum there in Las Vegas used to have an Area 51 exhibit called Area 51 Myth or Reality. And it was really largely a UFO exhibit with all sorts of interesting and fascinating things, not even necessarily related to Area 51. It was a very small component of this exhibit. A lot of stuff from George Knapp in there. But Robert Bigelow even contributed some artifacts to this exhibit. And one was something that George Knapp was involved in an investigation with, but a piece of metal that displayed unusual properties and like anti-gravity properties and just, you know, interesting things. I've written some articles on that, but Bigelow donated some of the stuff to this museum. But he's been involved in material collection and other aspects of UFOs for so many years. And again, talking about news this year, back in May was when 60 Minutes ran their interview with Robert Bigelow, and again saying things that he's been saying for years, but saying that there has been and is an existing presence, an ET presence on Earth, and, you know, saying that you don't have to go anywhere in space to find extraterrestrials because they're right here. And, you know, so all of his comments about his personal beliefs that we know that extraterrestrials are here. You know, so it's not surprising that Bigelow was heavily involved and perhaps still is involved in government UFO studies. Yeah. And it didn't hurt that he was a good friend of Harry Reid. So when Harry Reid was the one who really put this program in motion.
I think it gives the program credibility, too, to mainstream audiences, especially. And that's why I think the news is covering it, because Harry Reid is a major political player.
Yeah, yeah. And he had backing for this program through both Democratic and Republican senators. So I think that's a big thing. Like, it doesn't matter what political side you land on. This is a topic and an interest by many people, both in Congress, both in the military, both in the intelligence agencies. And yeah, I mean, Reid says he's not embarrassed or ashamed or sorry he got this thing going. He thinks it's a good thing, and he did his congressional service. And I think that's awesome. If this is the thing you're going to be remembered for, you have so many people who dream of that. So yeah, whatever. Another big thing I think is interesting is that officially this program supposedly has ended due to, you know, no more financing. But right. We are hearing, you know, by many of these people, Elizondo included, that it's still going on. Now, that really interested me in terms of who is still investigating it. Is this to the stars? Is this Bigelow still? I do wonder who they're alluding to when they say it's still being investigated. Do they
mean? Well, he certainly said that Elizondo, Lou, said that he and others were still continuing the program even after it had been disfunded.
Okay.
He was just doing it on his own time, basically.
And dime, I would imagine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Elizondo DeLange met with Bigelow a couple of months ago. This hasn't been, right. No one really broke the story. But, I mean, if you look on social media, just through, like, searching hashtags on Instagram, you can see Tom and Elizondo were there meeting with Bigelow and his daughter. So
granddaughter. Right. Granddaughter.
Yeah, granddaughter, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, that's Blair Bigelow.
Blair.
Good old
she,
Blair.
She works for Bigelow Aerospace. But yeah, she's the one who posted the photo. That's hanging incredible. Out there at Bigelow Aerospace, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that did go a little under reported and is pretty much a big deal.
Yeah.
Not only that, but the reason that Elizondo left was he quit because of the secrecy, he said, that was behind this. Like, he wanted the information out. So that was pretty interesting as well. How deep does the secrecy go with this project? I do wonder.
The interesting thing is he came on, he was the last ones to come on to the Stars Academy, and he was the kind of the big question mark. People are like, who is this guy? And he's been the one dominating the story this whole weekend. Every story has been about him. He's been on, you know, every show and every TV show and radio program since Saturday.
Yeah, and that is the real story. I mean, the real story that broke on Saturday and you're seeing the fallout now is not about any military videos that were released. It's about the confirmation that despite denying it for so many years, the U.S. government did and perhaps still does investigate UFOs up into recent years. So
absolutely. So I mean, anyone who doesn't have this keen interest that, you know, the four of us do, and who have been preaching for years that yes, the government does hide information about this, for the everyday person, I mean, I was talking to my girlfriend yesterday about all of this and explaining to her, yes, apparently they have metal alloys and things from structured craft that are not from mm-hmm. here. Again, right. that's very a very wide net of what it could be. But she immediately shivered and said, I had no idea. Like, yes, I know you guys talk about this all the time. You know, the X-Files covers this, but I always thought it was stuff of fiction. And we are seeing that a lot of the things that we do perceive as, you know, in a fictional realm are slowly coming true. I'm not saying drip, drip, splash, MJ by any means. But it is very exciting. Any faith that I have lost in DeLong and what he's trying to do, I'm still being very weary of it at all. But I think this is pretty interesting. It's very compelling. I want to see more gun camera footage because I think that is some of the big smoking gun stuff that we're going to get. And I guess to sort of wrap up this one, guys, what do you think of the footage itself?
I mean, I personally think it's fascinating. You know, I'm not a pilot, but reading and hearing what pilots have said, including the pilot who allegedly was the pilot of that flight, you know, comments that he doesn't think it was from Earth.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, that's interesting information.
Yeah, I agree with Jason because, like, none of us are pilots, so we don't know what that's like. So, and like I said, you know, the footage for us, it's very, you know, it's very grainy and it's very, so their commentary basically tells the story, you know, because basically all we're looking at is blips on a screen.
But here's the other thing, too. I want people to always keep it in mind, to listen to what he's saying. This is a pilot, a career pilot, somebody who'd been in the military for quite some time as a pilot, had engaged things in the sky. And when these pilots are seeing something that they've never encountered before, never heard about before, displays characteristics and behaviors and abilities that, you know, seems to be far beyond anything that we/they know about, that's huge. And we should take note of it. Put extraterrestrials aside. Yes, that may be a possibility, but just the fact that there's something like that, that we can't identify, we don't know what it is, but it's there and seems to outrun the technology we have, that's something that we should be interested in and something that merits study.
Absolutely. And I think the audio is very important here, too. And hopefully it has not been doctored at all. We do have people arguing that. But the fact that, like you said, Jason, these trained pilots, they're up there for a reason. They are scrambling this object. So they don't know if it's a potential threat or not. So while they're intercepting it, they also have to be ready for a national security threat to attack this thing. So I think it was Lou
who even said, and this is, you know, a very common sense thing, I would think, but it's lost on a lot of people, that despite the excuse given by the Ministry of Defense, by the United States, government for ceasing their investigation into UFOs is that, you know, we don't have time for this and we've determined it's not a threat. What Lou says is, look, when you know you have something in your airspace and you can't identify it and you can't intercept it, that's a threat.
Yeah, that's a good point. It doesn't mean it fired on you. That is a threat. It's not supposed to be there.
I think there's sort of a lot, though, that's kind of hovering on the peripheries here. And I think we've in the UFO community itself has kind of really been enamored with sort of the last couple of days of sort of story. I think we sort of need to be cautious in a few things. One, the news, especially 2017 in general, but I think the most recent sort of news in regarding these videos and regarding sort of this Pentagon story and all that is one sort of what ideology and what mythology are we sort of creating when it comes to sort of UFOs and the UFO sort of narrative that's sort of existed so far. Like what is sort of going to adjust and change in the UFO discourse over the next sort of year or so? You know, really, we see this huge reinforcement of the extraterrestrial hypothesis. You know, no one's really talked about anything beyond that. This is sort of really boiled down to potentially either secret military program or extraterrestrials in nuts and bolts sort of craft from space. Like, you know, this is really, I think, in the public eye, an ET question. Mm-hmm. We can sort of say that it isn't, and we can sort of say, oh, the newspapers are doing a good job of trying to keep aliens out of it. But at the end of the day, what's really driving these headlines is the term UFO, the term alien, the term extraterrestrial, and it's sort of mythologizing this story. And it's becoming very much sort of a key aspect of ufology in 2017 and into 2018. And ultimately, what is also kind of being lost as a result? What stories are getting pushed to the side because of this one? I would also kind of want to point out sort of the ufological irony in all of this. The government and the military has always kind of, by the UFO community in general, been viewed as someone you can't trust. Mm-hmm. They lie to us. They have secret underground bases. They have made deals with the extraterrestrials in exchange for abducting people and mutilating cattle and, you know, stealing our genetic information. You know, the American government studies their technology, whatever. Like, you know, like you can sort of pile on the various, again, UFO lore that exists out there. And we've kind of, a lot of people, especially within the UFO community, we now have this blind trust towards sort of this archetypical enemy of UFO community, right? The government has always kind of been the enemy, not always, but has definitely been the enemy since the 1980s, especially after sort of the MJ-12 debacle and the Paul Benowitz affair. The government was very much painted as the enemy here. They're someone you can't trust anyway. And now we're sort of relying on them as a community to provide this information. And a lot of people have bought it sort of hook, line, and sinker, just assuming, well, you know, hell, if it's a gun camera video, it must be 100% legitimate, or at least, and you know what, I'm not saying it isn't legitimate, I'm not very conspiratorial, but we're not necessarily looking at why now, like why has this all been released now? Why have only 30 seconds of the video been released? Why has this all come to light relatively recently? Is it because Tom DeLonge is this, UFO mogul who is able to push the right buttons? Or are there sort of agendas on top of agendas on top of agendas that are, again, designed similar to sort of MJ-12 in the 1980s and the Benowitz situation and everything from the 1980s designed to kind of manipulate the UFO community or to manipulate the message regarding the UFO community, to manipulate the narrative for some purpose or purposes? And I think, you know, as a subculture, I think we sort of need to definitely look at this as an angle, because to suggest that the government is just now suddenly, hell, you know what, we're just gonna be honest with y'all,
right.
I think that's ridiculous, and I think that that if you get fooled by that, you know, shame on you.
I agree with FJ, but it's funny, you know, we're just so, as a UFO community, we're so jaded, and you know, we're so inclined to question everything and where stuff comes from, so even if it was truthful, we'd be questioning it anyway.
Yeah.
So in the sense that we're kind of doing the work for them, if in terms of disinformation and just kind of having that discourse amongst ourselves. So just, we're kind of just so inclined to always question everything that comes from them. So even if it is accurate, we're still going to question it. So it just kind of, you know, we're in this situation where we're just kind of screwed in terms of, you know, what do we decipher, what we believe and what we don't.
Well, I'm not sure if it's we're screwed, but I think a lot. I agree with you, and I think, however, that we've also been played, right? I think the UFO community has definitely been played to be like this. I think a lot of the mistrust within the UFO community of others within the UFO community is definitely been seeded by sort of various three-letter intelligence agencies purposefully to cause a little bit of disruption. Again, I'm not very conspiratorial, but you know, if you're dealing with people who don't necessarily trust you as a government or they don't buy the status quo, you know, you're going to want to sort of maintain some aspect of control over this group of people who don't comply with the mainstream.
Yeah, that's a very good point, man. And I think, again, we always harken back to this idea that even if we don't have control over what might be in our skies, we can control the information giving to the public. So why they're giving this to us now, we may never know, but I think you guys make good points. What else is crazy is, has anyone noticed that Rick Doty has been around a lot lately? You have to wonder why.
Well, you know, with any subject, but especially the UFO subject, we always try to caution people to be cautiously skeptical of any information. I mean, you really have to question everything from the sources and the meat of that content. So, I mean, just, I know we're getting quote unquote official information here and official sources, but still, you know, you've got to be cautiously skeptical. You need to do your own research, and it comes down to believing what you're going to believe as an individual. But one thing that, you know, really kind of annoys me with a lot of the headlines I've seen with this latest news of the government's UFO program in and out of the UFO community is this statement that, oh, disclosure has happened. There's finally the confirmation that UFOs exist. Yeah. That's what I'm seeing inside the UFO community and outside, just in the general public. Like, oh, the UFOs exist. And, you know, that always makes me scratch my head, because I do understand and have talked to so many people that not even speaking extraterrestrial necessarily, but still a big chunk of the mainstream public doesn't think that there are unidentified objects in the sky. They think that, you know, they live in this safe, happy bubble, and the military has everything under control and knows every speck of whatever is flying in the sky, so they don't need to worry about it. We're all good. But I've seen so much of that today and yesterday about how we now know that UFOs exist.
Yeah, I've talked about this before in just I think the disclosure movement in general and sort of the exopolitical movement is a natural sort of extension of ufology, right? I mean, you look at, you know, 1940s, 50s, 60s, 70s ufology, it was really sort of investigating UFO reports and trying to piece together sort of the science behind it. And into the sort of the 80s and especially in the 90s and early 2000s, you have this sort of big push that, you know, really, you know, investigating UFO reports is sort of a dead art. And it's really all about disclosure. And I think disclosure is kind of at the point now where it's sort of run it's not run its course, but it's definitely kind of at this point now where it's 2017. It's been, you know, nearly two decades, and nothing's happened. And similarly to, you know, UFO investigating, you know, no one's found a conclusion, and disclosure, sort of this natural extension of it, no one's found a conclusion. There's no answer. So I think the disclosure movement itself is sort of trying to grasp at straws here. I think they're trying to legitimize their entire maybe philosophy, and trying to kind of say, you know, yes, you know, this is happening, and this is sort of where we're headed to next. It'll be interesting in a decade or so, or maybe in 20 years, to see sort of where the disclosure movement is, whether it's even still a thing anymore, and what kind of the next thing will be, at least the next sort of extension of ufology, let's say. I'm not saying that sort of investigating sighting reports is over, but it's very much no longer kind of the key big aspect of really the UFO discourse, right? It is all about government insiders, and it's all about kind of speculating on what the aliens are up to versus sort of, you know, people on the field, or people rather in the field, actually sort of talking to witnesses and investigating UFOs. It still happens, obviously, but it's, like I said, it's kind of a dying art, I think.
It actually is. And yeah, it gets looked down a lot on and pushed to the side. And I will say, for all you people out there who still believe in the value of looking into and investigating sighting reports, I'm raising my hand right now, friends.
Send it to me. Send it.
Just like 100%. With SETI and all those billionaires spending their money trying to talk to rocks. Like, I think there's value in all of these things. Let's do all the things, guys.
And Jason, you're getting me all riled up. You know, I agree.
He's on his third gin.
It's empty now. You know, it's all about the witnesses, right? And this is, I think, where I get a little flummoxed with To the Stars Academy and maybe Mr. DeLong and all of these other, you know, billionaires who are spending their money on UFOs. You know, okay, you have a few jet fighter pilots, which is, you know, great, they're witnesses. But again, you have a whole segment of people who have UFO encounters, who have encounters with sort of anomalous beings or whatever you want to call them, right? They engage with the phenomenon in some way. And ultimately, they're getting pushed aside, right? Like, we're pushing aside the regular everyday witness that has made up the bulk of ufology for since the 1940s. And it's like they no longer matter, right? Their UFO reports, their sighting reports, talking to them and investigating to them is becoming less and less important. And what's becoming more important is the discussion of Mr. DeLong or these sort of government insiders and intelligence officers who have played a role, I guess, in investigating UFO threats sort of for the government or whatever. I don't know. Should I be upset? Like, do I feel?
I think that's really interesting. It's a really interesting point. At the same time, I think you look at the flip side saying, well, maybe it's about time that, you know, these people in high positions are, you know, answer some of these questions, whether they're being truthful or not. At least that the spotlight's kind of on them now, more so than before. I think maybe that's a positive you could get from it. Maybe.
Yeah, I guess, you know, maybe they're finally sort of coming forward with their own personal witnesses, you know, military witnesses. I don't know. I'm a little still, you know.
Yeah.
And not only that, like, what witnesses report is so all over the place, you know? And and I think it just points to a phenomenon that is all over the place.
I will say that is one of the interesting things that allegedly took place or was a focus of this Pentagon UFO program was the experiencer element, where they allegedly did reach out and talk to people who claim to have had encounters to test and experiment and whatever, see if people had been physically affected by proximity to UFOs and other things like that. So
witnesses were
an element to that study.
No, I definitely don't have a problem with sort of the Pentagon issue. Like, I don't have an issue with that. It's more so just it's sort of the way maybe UFO discourse is going. Like, you know, the way what we're spending our time talking about. I don't know.
People get bored, and then you got to move on to the new hot, sexy topic. I get it. I see it all over the place, and it annoys me because I think a lot of important stuff gets left behind.
There is nothing less sexy than 50,000 chicken scratch scribbled pages of notes from witnesses and experiencers. Let me tell you that much. And I mean that with all the love and compassion I have.
I know you do, brother. I know you do.
I mean, you guys know that's exactly what my fucking book was about. And, like, it was not easy. I can tell you that right now. It's not sexy. It's not, you know, it's not as exciting as people would think. It's at times extremely traumatizing for the witness. It's very
uncomfortable and awkward for the interviewer, you know, in terms of like how you handle the information you're getting and eventually going to give to the public. Yeah, yeah. I do wonder, you know, while we're getting all this Pentagon stuff and this intelligence agency stuff, that's what the public is now seeing. I want to hear from the fighter pilots. I want to, you know, like, know what they were feeling, what they saw, like, did anything else, you know, what happened afterwards. Those are the things that interest me the most. So I do wonder, MJ, where UFO discourse is going to go in 2018, where it's going to go in terms of what we're getting from To the Stars, from this project. I don't know. Damned if you do, damned if you don't, I guess.
Hey, it is the phenomenon, right? It's definitely weird, and it's definitely going to mess with you, so.
And hey, we choose to be here.
We do.
We certainly do.
There's a reason that the three of you, you know, took the time out of your night to do this with me. So I guess in terms of where we're heading, I want to ask each of you, in terms of ufology, who in 2017 do you guys think we can look at and say, you are doing good work, and we hope we hear more from you in 2018. Mike, let's start with you.
So this is going to sound like totally like I'm kissing ass, but I'm going to have to say you. And here's why. Through your podcast, I think you have a great platform.
I just threw up in my mouth a little bit.
No, I'm serious. Hear me out for a minute. I think your podcast is a great platform. And every week you're able to come up with fascinating topics, different guests, and it's open. It's very inclusive, and you're almost creating kind of new names and new stars in the field, I guess, just through your show and just through the, like I said, the very inclusive aspect of it. Yeah, I don't look at it as who's making the biggest headline. I'm looking at it as who's helping to grow the field in the most way, and that's why I say you, Ryan.
Well,
so I'm sorry to be kissing butt, but. Yes.
That was really sweet, Mike.
There's
actually
a reason I brought
you
on.
Got a little happy tear in my eye right now.
I knew it.
I'm expecting that the $20 to hit my PayPal
exactly.
account.
You can reach out to my Patreon subscribers for that at patreon.com/somewhereskies. No, I'm just kidding.
All joking aside, but like I said, I think you do tremendous work. And, you know, I remember when I first read your book, I remember reading it and had this very primal journalistic take on it for someone with no, you know, prior like professional experience. Yeah. I thought it was absolutely, it kind of nailed the essence of kind of what, you know, what you should do when investigating. So ever since I read your book, I was a fan. And like I said, I think what you've done with the podcast has been great and hopefully continues to grow.
Well, thank you so much, man. I won't say anything else. Jason, let's move to you, my man.
Well, now I have to say you too.
No, man. You don't. Stop. God damn it. This is not a circle jerk.
You know I love
episode.
You, Brian, and I'm a fan, but I can't give you the award every year. So, well, you know, I was thinking about this, and I hadn't given it much thought through the year, but you know, when I think about somebody in the field of UFOs and UFO research who's made a contribution, who's done something, who's done some actual research and done something that, you know, benefits us as researchers and, you know, helps in an educational light. You know, I'm a big fan of education, and I think giving people information that they can cite to and use is really important. And somebody who jumps out at me is our friend Cheryl Costa. You know, this year put out the UFO Sightings Desk reference, a nice book with lots of numbers and information that got a lot of media play, big headlines. And she's still being contacted pretty regularly to do interviews with media about UFOs and UFO sighting stories. So I think Cheryl, you know, she's a journalist. She does a really good job with her regular column she does. And so I've been a fan of hers for many years. She's a friend. And I think because of her work, tireless work on compiling that UFO Sightings Desk reference, she gets my vote.
That's awesome, man. And I do have to mention this before we go any further in terms of Cheryl. This is insane. If you think about how far the UFO community stretches in terms of geography alone, Cheryl writes for the Syracuse New Times. For anyone who doesn't know, I am from Syracuse, New York. When I went home to visit my family this past summer, there was a signed version of Cheryl's book on the front porch of my parents' home. And I show up and I'm like, what the hell is this? And my mom was like, oh, yeah. That woman showed up with her book. She wanted you to have it. I found out Cheryl lives two blocks from my parents.
Oh, that's crazy.
Isn't that insane? I mean, come on. You can't even plan that stuff. But I would have to agree, Jason. I mean, this book, the work and dedication that Cheryl and her spouse put into this book is unbelievable. They deserve all the praise they can get. And I think that's a wonderful, wonderful choice for sure. All right, MJ, what do you got for us?
As much as I love Cheryl, I'm going to have to kick this old school. I don't know if people know, but I'm writing a book on the UFO subculture, and I've been talking a lot to a subculture within the subculture, all the historians and archivists who sort of log everything ufologically related. And one guy who I have to give a massive shout out to, and who gets my vote, is Paul Dean out of Australia.
Awesome.
Who runs the UFOs Documenting the Evidence blog. This guy is an FOIA master. And historically, he is a powerhouse in the UFO world. This guy knows everything, and he can cite military, I don't even know what they're called. He can cite like military reference numbers for various UFO events and whatever. He runs a genius blog. The guy does so much research. He pours his heart and soul into his work. And unfortunately, because his work is just sort of history and archiving UFO information, he doesn't get a lot of press, doesn't get a lot of attention compared to some of the other guys and gals out there. So my vote goes to Paul Dean, who this year sort of blew the doors off of the famous Westall case out of Australia from 1966, rather, and basically found a witness who was there and said it was a whole bunch of nonsense. And one teacher who just kind of went off the rails with a bunch of the students and just kind of started telling stories, and it became a massive UFO event. And according to his source, nothing really happened. So, you know, an interesting take on an old case, but Paul Dean definitely gets my vote this year.
That's awesome, man. These are so good, guys. I don't know how I can even contribute to this. I've been thinking about this for the past hour or so, trying to come up with someone, and it was tough, but I think I'm going to have to go with Miss Erica Lukes on this one. I know we've all spoken a lot to Erica. I did want to have her on tonight. I apologize that I wasn't able to make that happen, but the field we know is wrought with... It's a boys' club. Always has been, always will be. And any female researchers out there are scrutinized 10 times more than we ever will experience. The work that Erica has done throughout the years just astounds me, amazes me. What she's done, who she's made contact with. I know she just was with Erling Strand not too long ago out there in, is it Norway? Erling Strand with the Heseltine Lights?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, this she's going out of her way to go and investigate anomalous things in our skies, no matter what the hell it is. And I think she gets a lot of flack for a lot of stuff that she brings forward, but she's strong, she's due diligent, and she does the work. And not many people can say that when they're sitting on their fat asses behind their computers. So I highly respect the work that she is doing. I can't wait to see what she comes up with. And, yeah, that's what I got.
Excellent.
Do we want to do the 2017 people who should shut up for 2018?
I'm so happy you reminded me. I have that on a separate page here on my notes. Yes. So we talked about the people that we want to hear more from in 2018. If you have anyone, guys, that you want to hear less from in 2018, now is the time to voice your concerns. What do you got for me, MJ?
All right, so this particular character within the UFO world has been spouting off about evil cabals who are cutting his brake lines, and he recently published a book this year full of pseudoscience and a bunch of strange esoteric nonsense that makes no sense. So my vote for this year and into 2018 of the person in the UFO community who needs to shut up the most is David Wilcock. Take him off the air, please.
That is me clapping. Love it. Love it. All right. Mike, what do you got?
This is a tough one. I don't think anyone said necessarily shut up. I would like to see more than hear more. So, you know, if we're going to go back to Tom Belange, I just want him to, just put his money where his mouth is and continue to provide some of the stuff he's promised, rather tweeting like a butthurt child, you know? Like, he's, you know, let the video speak for themselves. So, yeah.
Love it. Jason?
Yeah, I'm too nice to say anything.
That's fair. That's fair. I completely understand. MJ,
well, my Fiesta water hasn't gotten me riled up like MJ, so I...
It's understandable.
Really? Okay, what? Do you need to get riled up over David Wilcock as my choice? Come on. You don't need to get riled up.
No, I've never been a fan.
That's just a natural progression of logic and feeling. Like, you know, come on.
You guys, you know what I completely forgot and we didn't talk about? The person I'm going to choose to shut up in 2017 and should have shut up for the past decade or so is Mr. Jaime Maussan.
Oh, well done.
Yeah, I totally forgot about the mummy thing this past year. Not the Roswell mummy, the other mummy. No, other mummy.
The Peruvian, or was it Ecuador, or where was this thing from?
Who Peru, gives a right? shit? Yeah, it was Peru.
Yeah.
It's Peru, yeah.
A fake. Yeah. Agreed.
So there we go, guys. We got the good ones, we got the bad, and with that, you've got the facts of life. So that is our late 2017 heavy wrap-up of Somewhere in the Skies. Before we go, gentlemen, where can we find all the work you're doing? Jason, let's start with you.
Simple place to go, rogueplanet.tv. You can also follow my spouting on Twitter at Acentric. That's Acecentric. And if you're one of those wonderful people who still values UFO sightings, you can email me too at jason@rogueplanet.tv.
Mr. DeMonte, what do you got?
www.punkrockandufos.com. That is my cryptozoology and culture site. And on Twitter, at Mike DeMonte.
And MJ?
You can find me at my blog, which is www.terraobscura.net. I also contribute to Mysterious Universe, so you can find me there. And you can follow me on all the social media at MJ Benias.
Love it. I look forward to your book, my friend. And guys, again, sure. I cannot thank you for coming on, taking the time to do this today. I think we only scratched the surface of what is to come in this year. I'm hopeful, and I look forward to whatever comes next, both in ufology and in all of your lives. So again, have a great holiday, happy new year, and thank you again for joining me.
Thanks very much.
All right, that is it for this week's episode. Again, you can find MJ Benias' work at terraobscura.net, Jason McClellan at rogueplanet.tv, and Mike DeMonte at punkrockandufos.com. Oh, and before I forget, just a warning that next week we will be taking a break to celebrate the holidays. But fear not, we will be back the following week with an all-new episode, and I'm sure some updates on Tom DeLonge's never-ending battle with ufology, both in the best and worst of ways. Thank you so much for an incredible year of support, whether it was interacting on Facebook, Twitter, or by just sharing the show. Thank you also to my Patreon subscribers. I have big plans for some incredible rewards coming in 2018. So why not end the year right and head on over to the Patreon campaign to learn more and to help support the show. That's patreon.com/somewhereskies. We are on Twitter at Somewhere Skies, Instagram at Somewhere Skies Pod, and all past episodes, articles, and contact info can be found on the website, somewhereintheskies.com. Have a very happy holiday season, everybody, and I will see you here in 2 weeks. Remember, keep your feet on the ground, but never stop searching somewhere in the skies.
I'm Jeremy, one of the hosts of Sick Boy Podcast, a weekly podcast where we speak with people living with chronic, terminal, mental, and physical illness. But here's the catch. It's a comedy podcast. Our goal? Help people understand that sometimes the best way to deal with the challenges of life is simply to laugh. Tune in on Apple Podcasts and be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. And hey, while you're at it, check us out on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. From the Antica Podcast Network, Sick Boy Podcast.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.